Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, stream our show at nprnews.org/listen live every weekday at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the show.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. Glad you tuned in today. The FDA has authorized the Pfizer vaccine for 12 to 15-year-olds. Canadian regulators have approved it as well. That means millions of kids could be protected when they go back to school in the fall. But encouraging parents to get their kids vaccinated may be as challenging as persuading the parents themselves to sign up for the shot. Yesterday, we talked about why vaccination rates are plateauing in some states, including in Minnesota. This hour, two guests with knowledge and experience in pediatric vaccination and infectious disease, and your questions as well. If you have kids between the ages of 12 and 15, do you approach the idea of getting a vaccination for them differently than the way you think of getting the vaccine for yourself? What are you most concerned about when you think about getting a vaccine for your 12 to 15-year-old? So I'd like to know, now that the FDA has authorized this for Pfizer and Moderna is coming soon too, if you have kids between the ages of 12 to 15, do you approach the idea of getting a vaccination for them differently than the way you think of getting the vaccine for yourself? What kinds of questions are you asking? What are you most concerned about? Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. And you can reach me on Twitter, where I see a number of parents are saying, hey, my kid will be first in line. But if you've got concerns, I want to hear about that as well, because I think our guests can put some facts up against your concerns. So tweet me at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. Dr. Tina Tan is with us, an infectious disease physician and a professor of pediatrics at Northwestern University School of Medicine. She's also a member of the CDC Board of Scientific Counselors, and she's with us from Chicago. Dr. Tan, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you on.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Stanley Perlman is with us, a pediatric infectious diseases physician, professor of microbiology and immunology at the University of Iowa, also a member of the COVID-19 Vaccine Working Group on Immunization Practices, and with us from Iowa City. And Dr. Perlman, welcome to you. Good to have you in the show.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Dr. Tan, is the regulatory approval process, is it in any way different when we're talking about a vaccine for kids than the way they work it when they're approving a vaccine for adults?
No, they're absolutely the same. The regulatory process is the same, so that the vaccine that is getting approved for pediatrics is found to be safe and effective in the pediatric age group.
Dr. Perlman, are they looking for any different elements or factors as they think about a vaccine for kids than what the FDA would have been looking for adults? Are they examining the data any differently?
Well, I think there is one small difference. Because we have so much information about how the vaccines worked in adults, instead of just doing a huge study again to expedite getting the vaccine approved for emergency utilization, what was done instead was what is called immunobridging, where they actually make sure that the vaccine induces an immune response which is at least as good as what was observed in adults. And in fact, when this was done, it was found that the vaccine was superior in children between the ages of 12 to 16 than it was in a comparator group from 16 to 25. So instead of doing this big study, again, that what they showed is that the vaccine works as well in terms of inducing an immune response, which protects you against the infection. And of course, safety and other factors in vaccine efficacy are being monitored as carefully as before. And I want to add one thing.
Uh-huh.
One surprising piece was that as they did this initial study, even though they were looking only for factors that are in the blood, they found that the vaccine was actually incredibly effective because there were 16 cases of COVID-19 in the people who received placebo in this rather small study, and no cases in the vaccine group. So again, showing efficacy.
That is remarkable. Dr. Tan, I think we just have to note that before we take some calls. 100% effective. How should we understand what that means?
So, you know, as Dr. Perlman said, what they're looking at is a group of 2,260 kids. Half of them get vaccine, half of them get placebo. And of those kids who got vaccine, none of them developed COVID compared to the kids who got placebo, where a number of them did develop COVID. So this is very, very encouraging. It really shows you that these kids mount a very robust immune response to the vaccine, and the vaccine is effective at preventing these kids from getting COVID disease.
Let me go to the phones here to Cindy in Apple Valley. Hi, Cindy. Really glad you called.
Hi.
What are you thinking about when it comes? Do you have a 12 or 15-year-old?
Yeah, I have a 15-year-old boy, and I think mostly about just the development that they're going through, like the hormonal development, going through puberty. And I think about that with any vaccine. We had a conversation together with my son about getting the HPV vaccine, and we did go ahead with it because we kind of wanted him to make that decision. And we've had a similar conversation about the COVID vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine, which I'm vaccinated. But I've always, of course, felt like I'm done. I'm obviously through puberty. And that's just one question that I had, you know, like,
sure.
is there research just about this type of vaccine? I don't worry about, like, fertility. I'm not worried about that rumor that it causes infertility. I, of course, think that's a valid question that people ask. But for what I know just about with my background, I know that's just not how these vaccines work. But I do worry about how they would impact adolescents. I have two girls that are approaching that age, and I can only hope that they develop a vaccine for younger children as well. But of course, I think that's coming.
It sounds like, Cindy, I think I have the essence of what you're asking here. And Dr. Tan, what do we see on the research to address Cindy's concern about any worries about the way this vaccine, affects puberty, kids that are in that kind of development time of their lives?
So this vaccine should have no impact biologically on puberty. The vaccine doesn't work that way. Basically, what this vaccine does is that it exposes you to the spike protein so that your body is able to develop antibodies to that spike protein. But it really has nothing or no impact on the stage or puberty itself.
A call here from Nikki in Blaine. Hi, Nikki. Good to have you on the phone.
Hi.
What are you thinking about on this?
My son will be 12 in August, so he's kind of on that approaching. And so I'm just trying to decide if, because he's been exposed to it, I think, so much to COVID, because I had it, his younger sister had it, I'm an ER nurse, and so I feel like he's been exposed to it. Is there a good reason for him to still get the vaccine, even though I feel like he's been exposed and never, ever come down with it?
Okay, good question. Dr. Perlman, what's the answer?
The answer is he certainly should get the vaccine, and here are the reasons. So first of all, we don't know that he actually had the infection, even though he was exposed to it. There's many illustrations of people not becoming infected when we think they should have been. Second of all, if he had an extremely mild case, he may well have developed a very, very a small immune response to the virus and may not be protected for a long period of time. Getting the vaccine will ensure that his protection is much higher and that he is able to move about more freely. And in fact, in some studies we've done, we found that people who had the infection and were boosted have really huge immune responses. That means that they should be protected for a fairly good period of time and protected against some of the variants that we hear about in the news.
You know, Dr. Perlman, I just want to add there, we had a show yesterday and where we talked about how vaccinations are plateauing, and we got some calls from people who said, I had the virus. Do I still need to get the vaccine? And our guests said pretty much what you've said. Then you boost up your immune response. So it is very worthwhile to get it. So the same advice goes for adults, yes?
Yes, the same is true for both adults and we think for adolescents. Of course, we have less experience with, we don't have any experience with adolescents getting the vaccine because we're just starting now. But certainly in a group that includes 17 and 18-year-olds who are not so far off adolescents, all this is true. So yes, receiving the vaccine is a good idea. If people have had previous infection with symptoms, they should still get vaccinated. They may have the same kind of local effects that people have with the second dose of vaccine.
Like fever, joint pains, that kind of thing, right?
And pain at the site of injection, those kind of things. But they all go away in 24 to 36 hours. Get vaccinated.
And Leah says on Twitter, yes, I have a 12-year-old and 15-year-old, and I'm hoping to get them vaccinated in the next week. It'll be a great summer. Can't wait to let them spend more time with friends and travel and all of the rest. To the phones here to Heather in Laverne. Hi, Heather. So glad you called.
Hi, Carrie. Thanks for taking my call.
What are you thinking about?
Well, I have four kids. Two of them are in that age group that have already been able to be vaccinated. I have a 16-year-old and a 17-year-old, and as soon as they were able to be vaccinated, we had them vaccinated. I have a 14-year-old who I'm hoping to get vaccinated as soon as possible, and I have an 11-year-old, and, you know, she kind of falls below that 12-year cutoff, and she has a severe form of epilepsy called Dravet syndrome, and our family has been pretty much staying home this last year and a half. You know, they've been doing online school, and we want to be able to get back out and enjoy life again, and we're hoping that it's approved for kids under 12 soon, because we really want her to be protected.
So, Heather, some questions come to my mind about this, and if I might, I will put them to Dr. Tan. Dr. Tan, is approval coming for kids under 12? And what about a child who has a condition like epilepsy? What should parents know about that?
So, you know, that child actually is at higher risk for having severe COVID disease and complications for COVID. So they absolutely should be vaccinated. And yes, there are going to be vaccines licensed for kids under 12 years of age, looking probably toward the fall or the winter time when these vaccines will be available for the younger kids.
Can you explain why you said that a child with a condition like epilepsy might be at greater risk for complications from the virus?
So we know just from data that's been accumulated throughout the pandemic that children with underlying conditions who frequent exposure to the medical system actually are at higher risk, you know, as they go out into the community for contracting COVID. And then we know that these kids that have underlying conditions potentially could develop more severe COVID disease and the complications that are associated with it.
Dr. Tina Tan is with us. She is a professor of pediatrics and infectious disease physician at Northwestern University School of Medicine. Dr. Stanley Perlman is with us, a pediatric infectious diseases physician and a professor of immunology at the University of Iowa. The big news today, the FDA has approved the Pfizer vaccine. This is one of the vaccines with the double shots for two shots for 12 to 15-year-olds. It looks like the Moderna vaccine is soon to be approved for 12 to 15-year-olds. And I'm asking you this morning, if you have kids in that age range, and I guess let's think about, given what Dr. Tan just said about the fact that the vaccine approval is coming for younger kids, how do you feel about this idea? If you have kids under 16, how do you feel about this idea of those kids queuing up and getting ready to get the vaccine? Do you approach this in a different way than thinking about getting the vaccine for yourself or other members of the family? What are you most concerned about when you think about this? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. And you can tweet me at Carrie NPR. I just want to let you know this because it's a little unusual going on here because you know we're in our member drive. It's Double Your Donation Tuesday. And right now, your gift will be matched dollar by dollar by the NPR Board of Trustees. So we've got $5,000 that we can spend on doubling your donation, matching it dollar for dollar. And I don't want you to miss out on that. So nprnews.org and 800-227-2811. I know it's a lot of phone numbers here, but if you go right on the website, you're going to see a button for donation. And if you're ready to do that, boy, these dollar-for-dollar matches don't happen very often. All right, back to the show here and back to the calls to Kai in Duluth. Hi, Kai. Really appreciate you waiting. What are you asking about today?
Hi, Carrie. I just wanted to bring up a unique situation I hadn't heard anyone talk about yet. I have a 50-50 custody with my son, joint legal and physical, and his mother is very, very anti-vaccine. And I'm in a situation where I cannot get him vaccinated because I would have to go to court just to get a court order. And his mom and I agree on almost every single thing else. So we're just in a tough spot here.
I've got some elderly
parents and they've been vaccinated, but I just want to make sure everything is all kosher. So
Kai, it sounds like your former wife also has not been vaccinated herself, but you have?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep. And my son has received all the other vaccinations. When he gets to 12, the other caller talked about the HPV vaccine, and we're kind of in the same boat with that one. So I think I'm just going to have to wait until he's a little older to make some decisions on his own. I'm not really sure what else to do.
Dr. Perlman, maybe you have some advice on this.
Yeah, I think this is a tough situation. The only thing that I think that we've learned over the last few months is that the person who might have the most ability to convince your ex-wife about the vaccine value are people like her local physician or other people that she really trusts. So if she's already spoken to everybody like that who could actually persuade her why vaccination would be good both for her and for your son, that would be the only thing that I could really come up with, because this is an option to get a vaccine or not. And it's only by people believing that they should get it, that they will take it. So, and we found that the people like the local physicians and other people who family members trust are really most useful for this. But other than that, I don't have any other ideas.
Dr. Tan, do you think schools are going to require, as they do with other vaccinations, proof of a COVID vaccination? That may, you know, if nothing else persuades his former wife, that might. What do you think?
Well, you really can't have mandatory vaccination in any setting under an EUA. The vaccine actually has to be completely licensed.
We should say authorization.
Yeah, emergency use authorization. The vaccine really has to be licensed before you can consider having mandatory vaccination. And complete licensure may be a little bit away. So it's interesting that your son has received all the other vaccines to now. What is your ex-wife's hesitancy to vaccinate him with the COVID vaccine?
Kai, what is she saying?
She does have some legitimate concerns because she was in a medical situation with some malpractice. So I think it's caused her to have some distrust. And I don't know if that's going to come back. I mean, we can't even bring up this subject, so it's a very tenuous situation.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Dr. Perlman that she really should have a discussion with your son's pediatrician and other healthcare providers that she trusts their opinion, because this vaccine really is important, as you know, for kids of this age, because kids of this age do get infected with COVID, and some of them actually can develop severe disease and end up being hospitalized for it. And it's a way of, having these kids move back towards some semblance of normalcy.
David says on Twitter, I had no hesitation getting vaccinated. As soon as my wife said, get to the clinic, they have extra vaccines they need to use, my keys were in my hands. I'll admit that when it comes to my 12-year-old, I'm hesitant to get her in the queue. I am certain I will get her in soon, though. Dr. Tan, I think we ought to say maybe a little bit more. We've said, hey, the FDA is as rigorous with kids as they are with adults. Let's say a bit more about why parents can have confidence that if they've gotten the vaccine, it is just as safe for their kids. What else can you add to that?
So this is exactly the same vaccine that the parents are receiving. This vaccine has gone through rigorous evaluation by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to make sure that the vaccine is safe and effective. You know, just because we were able to develop this vaccine quicker because of improvements in vaccine development technology does not mean that safety was not looked at very rigorously. Actually, this vaccine was very, very rigorously evaluated for safety and effectiveness, and it's the exact same vaccine that the adults are receiving. So it's not any different. And, you know, it really is important to vaccinate kids because we're not going to be able to control the COVID pandemic until we're able to vaccinate a sizable portion of the pediatric population.
Dr. Perlman, parents who are thinking about this might find this interesting. I was reading something in the journal Nature. They reported this last December that because kids' immune systems are still malleable and they have T cells that haven't encountered certain pathogens, they are even better equipped to respond to a vaccine like this. Maybe you could give a little bit more detail on the medical science here, and parents would feel a little more informed about it.
Well, the idea is that as we get older, parts of our immune system, particularly people who are over 75, so not so much in middle age, but even as people get older, their ability to respond to new proteins and new antigens decreases a little bit, just a little. So it's not a big deal until you get to quite elderly ages. And the corollary of this is as you are younger, particularly the ages of 12 to 15 or 6 to 16, these children really are in the best position to respond strongly to antigens or vaccines in this case to mount good immune responses. So these children will do well. And this was, in fact, as I mentioned earlier, what was seen in the study is that 12 to 15-year-olds reacted even better than 16 to 25-year-olds in mounting a good immune response to the virus. So that's what we're referring to. All this means is that children will do better with getting good levels of protection. And while we don't know how long the protection will last, the odds are that it'll last even longer for somebody who's 12 to 15 than for somebody who's older.
That's good news. Call here from Eric in Babbitt. Hi, Eric. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Sure. I guess I'm in the situation, I think, of a lot of parents where we got vaccinated as soon as it was available, my wife and I, but we've got a 12-year-old. And when we looked at the possibility that we were going to get sick from COVID and then the risk-reward of getting the vaccine, it was really a no-brainer for us. But with the much less likelihood of a severe illness if our daughter actually got COVID, what's the harm in waiting a year or two? The older population now who is most at risk has had the opportunity to get vaccinated. So the idea of we need to get vaccinated to protect those who haven't doesn't hold as much water for us.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Good question. Dr. Perlman, maybe you'll tackle that.
Yeah, so I think that there are several arguments why vaccination sooner rather than later is better. So the first one is that even though people have been vaccinated around you, we don't really measure how well the vaccine's working. So, and there's evidence, not very much of it, but there's some evidence of vaccine breakthrough. So to protect those people, and particularly as you get older, you have less of an immune response, to protect those people, anybody who's younger who can be vaccinated should be vaccinated. The second thing, which is probably even less altruistic, is that people who are 12-year-olds can develop a bad disease from getting COVID-19. So as you say, most people get COVID-19 who are 12 or 13, do just fine with the infection, have mild disease or no disease. But there's a certain small group who develop very severe disease. It's called a multi-inflammatory systemic disease. And this is something that has some mortality, some deaths associated with it. And more importantly, children are sick sometimes for months at a time. They can have heart lesions that take a while to resolve. So even in terms of the person, it's smart to get the vaccine because this side effect is, this effect, not a side effect, this effect of the disease itself is very bad for the person having it.
Just as we're having this conversation with Dr. Perlman and Dr. Tan, Anthony Fauci is testifying on Capitol Hill, and he's telling members of Congress that America can begin to return to normal, quote, very soon, if vaccine rates continue. So this plateau that we talked about among adults yesterday is concerning. And now we've got the FDA approval for kids 12 to 15 years old. And we're taking your calls and questions this morning. Questions about why should my 12-year-old, 13-year-old get vaccinated now? We can wait. What kind of risk are they really at? What did the FDA do when they actually looked at this data? How do we know it's safe? Back to our conversation now with Dr. Tan and Dr. Perlman. Dr. Tan, I want to ask you about something that is being discussed on Twitter. There are suggestions here. Here's Amy. She says, actually, there have been studies that show that having COVID-19 confers much better protection than any vaccine. Is that right?
It's very patient dependent. Some patients will get more antibody response. Other patients will not. And you can't determine who's going to develop a better antibody response. So if I'm looking at your or I'm interpreting your question correctly, yes, there are some people that may develop a good antibody response. However, we do know that after having natural disease, your antibody titers do wane actually quite quickly, so that you do become somewhat more susceptible to COVID after a period of time. So if you get vaccinated, this allows you to basically boost your antibodies up to a higher level to protect you against getting COVID.
And Dr. Perlman, I mean, Amy goes on here to say there's no need to get a vaccine for a disease like this. The push itself is highly suspicious. The idea is to the vaccine is to protect people from ever getting the disease in the first place because you don't know what kind of side effects or consequences come from getting the disease. Yes?
Yeah, that's true. And then I think the other thing you want to add is that there's, when one thinks about immunity, there's at least two ways to think about it. One is what's called sterilizing immunity. So that's what happens after we get measles or the measles vaccine. We never become infected. But with this disease may behave more like what we see with common cold coronaviruses, where you can get reinfected, but you get very, very mild disease, and you're not able to transmit the virus to other people. So we don't know where we stand in that spectrum right now of how this vaccine will work. But as Dr. Tan said, there's just so many different responses that people have. Some people have had a natural infection, may have a great response. Others have had very mild responses. They certainly benefit from the vaccine. And the two other points are we don't really know what's most important in protecting people from future infections. We don't know if it's antibodies. We don't know if it's what are called T cells, which are cells that fight the infection. And so we don't know the relative importance of each one. And different vaccines may induce different parts of this immune system. So you put this all together, and I don't think it's fair to say, in fact, I'm sure it's not, that the natural infection induces a better response than the vaccine. It may in some people, but I think it's the minority. I think that the vaccine does at least as well.
Call here from Paul in Aiken. Hi, Paul. I know it's been a while. Thanks so much for waiting.
Hi. Can I just first disclose that my family is not anti-vaccine?
Understood.
But to the same point that you just mentioned, if my whole family, the COVID went through my household, we all had very mild symptoms. We all had the positive tests. why would I rush my children to get an emergency approved vaccine for a disease that for us was very mild?
That you had it. Yeah. Dr. Tan, if the family has had it, nobody's at risk there. Why should he be first in line with the 12 to 15 year olds?
Well, I mean, just because you've had it and you've had mild disease does not mean that you may not get it again. There are other variants that are now circulating in the community to which you may be susceptible to. The other thing is that we know that if you have milder disease, you probably don't develop as a robust an immune response as you would if you had more significant disease. And this still places you and your children at risk for potentially getting another bout of COVID-19. And just because you have had mild disease doesn't mean that, you know, several months later you may not develop the multisystem inflammatory syndrome, which could be a very severe consequence of having had COVID.
Paul, when you think about the, hey, we had it, why should we go get it? Is it just the, we've got to schedule it, we've got to make time for this, or is it some of what you perceive to be unknowns about the vaccine?
It's much more the unknowns. If we know that the disease was not dangerous to us, why would we go into an unknown situation of an emergency approved vaccine?
Dr. Tan, will you respond to that too?
Sure. So, you know, just because you had mild symptoms initially with your first bout of COVID doesn't necessarily mean you can't get COVID again. And if you got COVID again, you could have more severe disease associated with COVID, especially if you got COVID secondary to one of the variants that is currently circulating. Vaccination really is to protect you and your children from developing COVID disease if you are exposed to it again.
Dr. Perlman, you want to add something?
No, I think that really covers everything.
Okay. From a listener on Twitter, my youngest is 16 and fully vaxxed. A relative's young teen was hospitalized for a week with COVID and will have a slow recovery. Another relative's college student was hospitalized. And then she adds, tired of the this doesn't affect the young nonsense, to the phones to Katie in the Twin Cities. Hi, Katie.
Hi, I am calling because I got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine but had some pretty significant symptoms afterwards.
Oh.
I spiked a fever of 105 and actually passed out and hallucinated.
Oh my gosh.
Afterwards. Yes, and so I'm curious if, in fact, how can I know that getting the vaccine for my child is going to be safe? Is there a connection between the genetics of myself and my child that cause him having the same symptoms?
Dr. Perlman, good question. What do we know?
Yes, so that's a good question. I don't think we know the answer to that question. I would think that there isn't a genetic association. But I've been wrong about 10,000 times in this pandemic, so I don't want to say for sure there isn't. But what I would point out is that the effects you had were very unpleasant, undesirable, but I suspect they went away within 48 hours, and you're now protected against COVID-19, which is far worse. And the same thing will be true for your child, who most likely will not get the same kind of problems and will be protected. So that's all I can say about that.
The head of the CDC is on Capitol Hill at the moment, and she, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, and she's saying, I would encourage all parents to get their kids vaccinated. At 2 o'clock today, Minnesota Public Radio News is going to air the Department of Health conference call live as it happens. And they will take a lot of questions and address a lot of queries from parents and caregivers about getting young people vaccinated. So reporters will be asking questions. They'll be giving a lot of information, and we're going to air that live at 2 p.m. So listen in to that. To Lee in Glenwood, Minnesota. Hi, Lee. Good to have you on the phone.
Hi.
My question is about brain chemicals. I know that one of the common side effects from the vaccine has been brain fog, and I have a relative who suffers from depression and has been on antidepressant medication, and he believes that one side effect from his vaccine was that he went into a fairly significant depression. Now, the way this relates to kids is I have some grandchildren that are on medication for ADHD.
Okay.
What do we know about how that might affect them in getting a vaccine?
Dr. Chan, I've heard this about brain fog from the disease. I haven't heard about it from the vaccine. What are you seeing on that?
You're correct. I mean, people can develop brain fog after they've had COVID infection, but from the vaccine, you really should not develop any brain fog. You're not being infected with the organism. I mean, what the vaccines do is that it, you know, helps your body develop antibodies to the spike protein. So I've not heard of people developing brain fog after receiving vaccine. You know, with regards to the relative that has depression, we do know that COVID, the pandemic itself, has made some mental health illnesses more pronounced, and depression is one of them. So it may be the depression that has gotten worse during the pandemic, but has nothing to do with the vaccine. Similar with kids that have ADHD, we know that during the pandemic, the ADHD does get worse, primarily because many kids are isolated, they're not attending in-person school, et cetera, and their routines are off. But it really should have nothing to do with creating a brain fog.
Dr. Perlman, I have a question about dosage. Is the dosage that's going to be available to kids the same, different than the doses that we're getting as adults?
It's the same dosage as adults get. And we have to remember that if you compare the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines, right off the top, the Moderna vaccine is about three times more of the RNA than people receive in the Pfizer vaccine. So there's really quite a range of safe RNA levels to give and not worry about it. So in this case, the studies were done with the same dose that adults received for the 12 and 15-year-olds, and the responses were even better.
Here's Heather from Brooklyn, New York, who says, are there any risks? I have a 13-year-old. I have no rational basis for this hesitancy, but I'm much more concerned about her health than mine. Are there any long-term negative effects that they can imagine happening? Dr. Perlman, what'd you see on that?
Well, we've used the vaccine for less than a year now, and so far there's been no long-term effects of vaccination. There's been things have been noted in the first couple of weeks, not with the RNA vaccines. They've been remarkably safe, except for a very few people who develop allergic reactions. So they've been remarkably safe. So there's no hints that we're going to have long-term effects, and we shouldn't. The vaccine is made of RNA. The RNA goes away very quickly. The protein is produced for a period of time, the viral protein, and the body reacts to it, and then that should be the end of the story. So we don't think there'll be long-term effects. We can't predict what'll happen in 5 years, but I think it's virtually, not impossible, but it's very, very unlikely that there'll be anything out there.
Dr. Tan, it sounds like Johnson & Johnson are one of the vaccine manufacturers who are studying the vaccine in women who are pregnant in their second and third trimesters. Do you suspect whether the regulatory process for pregnant women is going to be significantly different, or do you think an approval is coming for that too?
Well, you know, even now with the EUAs for the vaccines that are currently available in this country, which is the Pfizer, Moderna, and the J&J, it is recommended that pregnant women receive the vaccine. And even the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists have a recommendation out there that pregnant women receive the vaccine in the second and third trimester, because we know that pregnant women who get COVID disease are at increased risk for developing severe disease with COVID.
I see. All right. So at the moment, if you are pregnant, you have a recommendation to get the disease. Or I'm sorry, to get the vaccine. God, I'm sorry to get the vaccine. Oh, geez. To Jesse in Duluth. Hi, Jesse. Thanks so much for waiting.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
Sure. What do you want to know?
Yeah, I have a 15-year-old daughter that has Down syndrome. And I was just curious if any of the testing on younger people included any special needs kids.
Okay. Dr. Perlman, what do you know about that?
So what I can tell you is more about the adult studies where efforts were made to include lots of people who did, in fact, have underlying conditions. But I don't know in the rather small Pfizer study if children with Down's disease were included or if there were sufficient numbers to make any conclusions about them. But what I would say is that we know children with Down's disease are at a higher risk for developing a respiratory disease and having worse complications with it. So given that there's no evidence that Down syndrome children do worse with the vaccine, and given the possibility that they will have more severe COVID-19, I think the data would come down on the side of giving the vaccination.
Nikki says by 12, kids should have some personal agency. If mine were hesitant, we would have conversations with their doc. As it is, they can't wait, and I won't stand in their way. Dr. Tan, I was curious about what you think, how you think parents ought to have discussions with kids about getting the vaccine. What can be said? What should be said?
You know, I think kids of this age are old enough to really understand that this virus has really changed their world and their perception of their world, especially given the fact that many, many children do not attend in-person school, and that's really had a major impact on their development from a social as well as an intellectual standpoint. So what I would do is, you know, talk to them and explain to them that this is a way to protect them against getting this particular virus for which they may become quite ill from. And it's a way of getting them back to the activities that are really important to them, such as going back to school in person and, you know, participating in many different sporting events and other things that they enjoy.
That's a good point. Hanging out with your friends, maybe getting to go on a trip to see your grandparents. Yeah, that should be pretty exciting. Dr. Perlman, I wanted to ask you whether you think I was seeing that Pfizer has announced a global study for kids 6 months to 11 years old. I think earlier you said you think this may be coming, what, fall or winter? Do you anticipate, you know, we're seeing, obviously we're seeing legitimate concern from parents for this age group. What do you think we'll encounter for kids who are, or for parents who are thinking about having babies inoculated?
Well, I think that in the U.S. that this is going to be done in two stages. I may be wrong about this, but my understanding is it'll be done in children who are 5 to 12 and then younger to 5. I'm not sure that that's correct, but that's my understanding. So I think that the same discussion that we're having now will occur. Children of younger ages, particularly 5 to 12, do very well with the infection. They're probably at the lowest risk of any group, or 5 to 10. But still, there is a risk. And again, there's a risk of spreading it to other people who are not immunized or people whose immunity might have waned. So the same arguments will be true. We expect the vaccine will be equivalently safe and with no side effects, appreciable side effects. So I think that in these smaller children from 6 months to 12 years, we will eventually recognize that it's an important thing to, for children to get vaccinated. I want to see what the results of the study are, of course, first, to see how it works and see if there's any things that any surprises that we didn't expect.
Good note.
That's why we do the studies.
Quick last question here from Katrina in Robbinsdale. Hi, Katrina. What do you want to know?
Hi, I was curious if children are just as likely as adults to contribute to variations being generated, and if children being vaccinated would help avoid more variants.
Good question. Dr. Tan, the spreading of variants among kids.
Yeah, so we know that the more COVID-19 is able to spread in the community, the higher risk there is that a variant will develop. And, you know, given that many of the older adults have now been vaccinated, what we've seen in the last couple of months is that, you know, about 22% of the new COVID infections are occurring in the pediatric population. So that gives the virus more of a chance to mutate and create a variant. by vaccinating these children, you're actually preventing the spread and transmission of this virus, so it decreases the risk of variants developing.
I will add to this that Dr. Walensky, again testifying before Congress, is saying vaccines give us hope, but the variants could set us back. Drs. Tan and Perlman, thank you so much. I'm really grateful for the time and all the information. Much, much appreciated. Dr. Tina Tan from Northwestern University School of Medicine, Dr. Stanley Perlman from the University of Iowa.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. If you'd like to hear more conversations like this, subscribe to our podcast. And thanks for listening.